Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
In a teaching like this one, the idea of celebrating any one particular religious holiday creates sort of a dilemma. And I say that because most religious holidays, as we know, are based on some sort of supernatural or mythological story, like the ones found in the Bible, that the followers are supposed to accept on faith without question. But we believe here something slightly different. We believe that almost all of the old stories, and you know what they are, in virtually every religion are metaphorical. In other words, they didn't happen the way that they're written down. They're lovely stories, but all they are stories. People who show up in a teaching like this one are generally spiritual seekers, okay? Seekers who have made the decision to put our energy and our attention into trying to understand the deeper meaning behind all of the stories of all the great spiritual traditions, which is why I always like to say that this teaching here is more of a philosophy than a religion. It's more of a way of looking at things than just a list of things that we need to believe. However, even though that's true, most of us here were still raised in some sort of a religious tradition, where holidays like Christmas or Hanukkah or Ramadan or any of those were an important part of the year. On those special days, maybe we had to go to church or temple or synagogue an extra time, which I always hated as a kid, going to at Espiritu Santo Catholic Church, you know, having to go on during the week and Sunday. You know, I always hated that. But we also had vacation from school, 2 or 3 weeks off, which kind of made up for it. And then there were the presents, sometimes the food, really, really good food, or the candy, and then we'd take a trip to grandma's house where there'd be more presents and more food and more candy. So it was all pretty cool. So holidays like Christmas or Easter or any of the other holidays, whether or not we knew exactly what they meant, came to hold a fairly positive position in our heart as a time of year when we could relax and get away from our normal routine and spend time with family and friends and think about all the really good things in our life that we don't seem to think about too much during the rest of the year. But the fact remains, okay, even though Christmas is Christmas trees and shopping and all this other stuff appears to be the basic underlying theme of these holidays, whether or not we think of it that way, is spiritual. And I use the word spiritual instead of religious for a very specific reason. Because any celebration, even if it's based on stories about God or about some supernatural event, no matter what spiritual path we happen to be on, should always be a time for us to remind ourselves of three things. And here they are. First, every holiday, no matter what it is or what path we're on, should remind us that there is a higher power, a spiritual power, something greater than the world we see. That's one. Number two, the holiday should remind us that whatever the nature of this power is, it is completely present in every single one of us, no matter what our religion is. That's two. And number three, once we start to accept this power and to express it in everything that we do, then the world's going to become a much better place for everybody. Peace on will, good will towards everyone. Those are three things that every holiday, no matter what religion we're in, should remind us of, every spiritual holiday. Now, we can talk about Jesus, we can talk about the Buddha, we can talk about Allah or Yahweh or whoever, we can talk about love, we can talk about giving and thanksgiving and forgiving, all the different kinds of giving. We can talk about peace on earth and goodwill towards everybody, but it all comes down to being kind. That's why I love the Dalai Lama. He talks about loving kindness is his religion. Okay, so that's the fundamental purpose of these holidays. It's to raise our consciousness from the human level to the spiritual level, from the human level to the God level, if you want to use that word. Because thinking about spiritual things for at least some specific times during the year is a good way to keep us from doing non-spiritual things to one another. So this morning I want to talk about a few aspects of this holiday that we call Christmas. I know we're in the middle of Hanukkah, if you were raised in the Jewish tradition, but I talked about Hanukkah last year, so now it's Christmas's turn. And the title of my talk is kind of an old Bible term. It is the Word Made Flesh. That's one of those old religious phrases that applies to Jesus' birth, where he's describing him as the Word of God, fulfilling the prophecies from the Old Testament that the Son of God would come to the earth as a Messiah in human form to die for our sins so we'd all be saved. That's kind of Christianity in a nutshell, and I know a lot of us were raised in that kind of thing. But the funny thing about it is most of the people who celebrate Christmas don't know very much about it at all. So let me give you a few little known facts. First of all, for 200 years after the death of the teacher, Jesus, nobody knew or cared when he was born. It was totally irrelevant. In fact, early on, the church, there wasn't a Catholic church or Protestant church, it was only the church at the time, actually made it a sin to celebrate Jesus' birthday, because they thought that brought into question his divinity and they didn't want to go there. So they didn't want people to even think about it. It wasn't until over 300 years after the teacher died that the celebration of his birth was officially accepted by the church and the specific day arbitrarily chosen. And the day they chose was one that coincided with a huge festival to the god Mithras, who is a god who was common to both the Greeks and the Romans. They figured if the people were out celebrating their god, they could celebrate theirs and nobody would notice, because at the time they were getting persecuted, okay? And all the nativity scenes that we see everywhere, that we have all these political arguments and everything like that, the manger, the wise men, the shepherds, all that stuff, that tradition was started in the early 1200s by St. Francis of Assisi, okay? Before then, none of that stuff existed. So if you think about it, in many ways, the Christmas story is not really the foundation of the Christian teaching. Actually, Easter is more the foundation, okay, with its message of God overcoming death and all that. But Christmas is supposedly how it all began. They had to make the story consistent, because if you get a divine being who's on earth, who's going to establish the foundation of your religion and then make a very dramatic exit, which Jesus did, okay, it only makes sense that there has to be an equally dramatic entrance in order to make the story consistent, even if nobody really knew what the birth looked like. So the thinking goes like this. If the Messiah left the world in a special way, then he must have arrived here in a special way. And if the way he really showed up isn't flashy enough, or if you don't know what it actually was or when it actually was, you may have to improvise a little bit after the fact. I mean, you can't have God arriving on the planet the same way everybody else arrives. First of all, it's very messy. It's got all the sex stuff involved and all these other things that they want to keep totally separate from the story. That's where we came up with this scene. Now, just to be fair, I'm not picking on one group of people. This is not just a Christian hang-up, okay? There are stories that existed long before the Christmas story that most of us are familiar with that are very, very similar. I mean, I could name just a few. I went through some books, pulled out. There was the god Horus in Egypt in 1550 BC. There was Krishna in India in 1200 BC. Indra in Tibet in 800 BC. The Buddha in 600 BC. The point I'm making here is all of these were hundreds of years BC, before the birth of Jesus, okay? And in every one of these stories, without exception, these different gods or prophets or whoever it happened to be were said to be conceived by a father god with a virgin human. Every single one of these stories, without the conventional form of intimacy and childbirth, announced in advance by some sort of prophecy or angel or messenger and born under what could only be called miraculous circumstances. Every single one of these stories, hundreds of years before the story we've learned. I'll tell you one. The Buddha, for example, was supposedly conceived when the god Brahman came to his mother in a dream as a white elephant and entered her side. And 10 months later, not nine, they got to be different. You know, 10 months later, his mother, who was a queen, left the palace, went to a sacred woods near the palace, and the Buddha came out of her side. Once again, can't have that sex stuff involved. You don't do that with religion, you know. Came out of her side, already speaking and teaching with sacred beings spreading lotus blossoms beneath his feet. Sound a little familiar? You know, all of these stories are similar, okay? So the nativity story that most of us were raised with, about a babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, laid in a manger, visited by kings while angels sang overhead, is a very nice story, but it's not historical, obviously, and it's not particularly unique. Now, the point I'm making here is all of these stories, as beautiful and interesting as they are not what we need to be focusing on. That's really what Angela was talking about there. They're not what we need to be focusing on. I mean, they're fine for writing songs about, like Patrick had there. That's great. They're fine for, you know, picking up plastic characters to put on your lawn during the holidays, all that kind of stuff, you know. But in terms of spiritual understanding, they can be a distraction from the real meaning. You see, religion may be based on mythology or superstition or culture or tradition or all these other things, but true spirituality is not. Religion is based on that stuff, but true spirituality is not. So we need to think about what all these different stories have in common, not how they separate us, not as historical events, but as stories about deep spiritual wisdom being recognized and embraced by the human race. You and me. So we need to see the message of all these stories as a source of wisdom that we can actually use in our life, once we understand the real message, to create a better life for ourselves and a better world for us all. So I believe this phrase, the title of my talk, The Word Made Flesh, okay, because it applies to all of these stories, and I'm going to tell you how, not just a Christmas story, has something valuable to tell us that's greater than anything we may have been told by any single book or any single teaching, no matter how it was presented. Because one thing we can be sure of, especially when it comes to spirituality, is that the message is always greater than the messenger. The message is always more important than the messenger. The messenger, the story, the prophet, the guru, the mythology, the metaphor, whatever it is, these are all vehicles. They're simply vehicles for the infinite intelligence of the universe to present itself in a way that we can understand based on the culture that we were raised in. Our problem is we get too caught up in the drama of the story, or we get distracted by the messenger. We get distracted by the messenger. That's why somebody once said Jesus was pointing at the answer and we started worshiping his finger. It's a great statement. You've probably heard it. So let's talk about what this idea means, okay, this phrase, the Word made flesh, because it is actually one of the most important spiritual concepts in any teaching, including this one. In fact, it's the basis of what we teach. It's the foundation that says that our thoughts create things, become things, the way our beliefs become our experiences. I mean, if you think about it, the story of the birth of an innocent child in a stable in the middle of nowhere who becomes what they call the light of the world sounds a lot like a new idea born in a single person's mind. Doesn't it? It sounds very, very similar, whether it's your mind or my mind or anyone else's. An idea that is born in the midst of chaos and darkness and confusion that saves the world. Or an idea that comes forth from someone and they bring it to fruition, so to speak, and change or solve a serious problem of the world. One thought in a single person's mind, if it is nurtured and expanded and embraced and focused on like a beloved child, one thought in one person's mind can become a seed that allows us to create anything we desire, to create love, to create health or healing, to create prosperity, to create peace on earth, or anything else. Because everything that exists starts out as an idea or a seed, and the idea has to come through someone before it can grow. Just like a child, it's got to come from a person, okay? Every newborn child, and I do, we don't do christening ceremonies. We do welcoming ceremonies for children, welcoming a new spirit to the planet. It's really a beautiful ceremony. I haven't done a lot recently, but he used to do a lot of them. Every newborn child is potentially a Messiah in the real sense of the world. Every single child has the ability within them to become a Jesus or a Gandhi or a Martin Luther King Jr. or Mother Teresa or any of them. Of course, they've also got the possibility of becoming Hitler or Stalin or Osama bin Laden or something else, but we don't think about that. We don't like to think about that, okay? Remember, Jesus and Judas, two bookends of the Easter story, were both born with the same potential, with the same possibility. That means as far as you and I are concerned, as spiritual beings here with this human experience that we came through by a physical process, how each one of us affects the world or our own individual life and what kind of a life experience we have depends upon this constantly changing blend of the inner and the outer, the inner in here, the invisible part where I make decisions, and the outer where it manifests in my life. As we grow from our beginning as an innocent child, and every single one of us in here was that, into a mature or not so mature, or aware or not so self-aware adult. In our early years, I mean, some of you have children, nephews, nieces, all of them. In our very early years, when we are trusting and naive and innocent, we are extremely vulnerable to our environment. We're affected by what our family believes. We're affected by what our teachers tell us, by what our peers tell us in school, by our ministers, by television, by our culture, of all the things that the world around tells us, are true. And the kids now are being affected by that screen they got in front of their face 22 hours a day. They really, really are. But as our consciousness develops and we become more and more self-aware and conscious of something in us, of the spirit, if you want to call it that, within us, okay? And as we learn to think and to listen and to make conscious, intelligent choices based upon that inner wisdom, and not everybody grows up that way, but if we decide to do that, okay, we recognize that our effect on the world around us becomes much more powerful. Much, much more powerful. That was the real story of Jesus in the nativity scene. Instead of all the stories that are told about him, he probably was born as a nondescript, anonymous, poor child, one of many thousands being born at the time. But he eventually, this small babe, eventually brought a single idea to the world that was so powerful it transformed the world. The idea of love as the most powerful thing that there is. Love of God, love of self, love of every other person. And that was the message that he spread. That was the message that he spread. Not the message that we're all sinners. He never said that. I'm sure no wise spiritual teacher would have said that. I mean, what's interesting is, as a nice Jewish boy being raised in the Middle East, in a land controlled at the time by the Roman Empire, universal love was probably not the message that he was raised with. He was not raised with that. He was raised in a brutal occupation of a foreign power. But it was the message that he was born with in his heart, as we all are, every single one of us, and that message he chose to follow as his ministry began was the message of love. The message of peace. Not because he believed that he was the only begotten son come to earth and that he was the only one who could do it. He started to teach that because as he became more and more aware and more enlightened, he came to the realization that he was a perfect expression of God, but not the perfect expression of God. And he proceeded to tell us this in every translation of every single Bible going through history, okay? He told us that what he was doing, we could do. We could transform the world with the power of our thoughts and our beliefs. That's what he told us. In other words, he had reached the level of spiritual understanding where he knew with complete faith that he was the Word of God made flesh, and so was everyone else. So was everyone else. And he knew this even if his followers didn't understand what he was trying to tell them. And when I say his followers, I'm talking about his followers then and his followers today. Today. Now, as a quick point of information, for some of you who were not raised as Bible thumpers, I know there's a few out there, this phrase, where it came from, this is important. The Word made flesh originally comes from the Gospel of John, which is one of the four in the New Testament. It's the most kind of woo-woo esoteric of the Gospels, and it was probably written about 120 years after Jesus died, so there were a lot of question about the translation. But it starts out like this. And sort of, if you have any bias about the Bible because of how you were raised, just set it aside for a minute and listen to this. It starts out, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And all things were made by him, and without him was not anything made." Okay, that's all the old English, the St. James Bible. That refers to the creative power of spirit. In the beginning, there was a word, a creative word. And then a few verses later, this is where it comes from. Whoever wrote this says, "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us." And dwelt among us. Change that word "among" to "within us." The Word became flesh and dwells within us, as us. So here we have the Word taking the physical form, which is part of the creative process. It's very similar to the Genesis story, okay, where it says, where it was written that the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. All these old mythological stories. But then we are told God said, "Let there be this," and this showed up. let there be that, and that showed up, all of those things. And as this word was spoken, whatever the word was, it became that thing. That's the creative process. It's an explanation of the creative process. Now, obviously, God didn't speak with a voice. This power didn't speak with a voice. It spoke as an intelligence inherent in life that was growing. And he probably didn't speak in English because it wasn't invented yet. Okay, same thing. So we're talking about here, what we're talking about is a universal intelligence doing what it does, which is create. At the very simplest level, we're talking about the invisible becoming visible, about thoughts becoming things, okay? But this idea of the Word made flesh symbolizes something even more than that. It isn't about just any old idea becoming any old thing. When we talk about the Word, our Word, using a capital W, we're talking about focusing on a specific idea or specific belief that we have in mind. So we're talking about our word as a focusing of thought, okay, that is used for a specific intent. We're talking about words that are deliberately chosen for a specific purpose and that they are going to accomplish exactly what we want them to accomplish. That's what we're talking about. It's that kind of clarity of thought and belief and the passion we put behind it that gives us the power to create whatever we want. And I'm not just talking about things. I'm talking about creating wonderful relationships. I'm talking about creating healing, whether it's emotional healing or sobriety or anything else. We're talking about being able to create an entirely different life. Now, the people who really understood this, all the great teachers and all the great teachings throughout history, they knew this. They knew this very clearly, okay? The idea of our word becoming something was not just something to talk about. It's a fundamental truth of who and what we are, okay? A couple quick quotes. In the Old Testament, in Proverbs, it says, "The word of a man's mouth are the wellspring of wisdom as a flowing brook." In Ecclesiastes, it says, "Be not rash with thy mouth." I kind of like that one, pretty straightforward. And then in the New Testament, Matthew, it says, "Every idle word that we shall speak, we shall give account on the day of judgment, for by our words we are justified, and by our words we are condemned." Ooh, yeah, oh, bad stuff. That sounds pretty serious, you know? We're not condemned to eternal fire. We are condemned to live the life we're creating by our beliefs. And we're not condemned by anybody but our own stupidity, okay? The day of judgment that they're talking about isn't the day we die. The day of judgment is every single day when our words become our reality. They become our life. So we're talking about our ability here to consciously and deliberately choose our thoughts to create specific results now. Now, you may not see it right off the bat. You may be planting a seed, but that seed will grow, okay? We're also talking about the disadvantage of being careless with our thoughts and creating things we don't want. That has nothing to do with God. That's up to us. That's the power we've been given because we're the only ones responsible. In The Science of Mind, Dr. Holmes writes this. He said, "The spirit is the starting point of everything. The invisible intelligence is the starting point of everything. There is a presence in the universe," he says, "that we call God, intelligence, or law, which by the very act of its word creates an objective form which is like its word. The word becomes flesh." Okay? Now, I want you to notice, it doesn't say that the word becomes concrete or steel or aluminum or fiberglass, okay? It says the word made flesh. Because if our word can create living, breathing flesh, reality, it can create anything. It can create anything. Our belief in the creative power of our word as spoken through us as our word not only enables us to heal, bless, and prosper, as they say, it allows us to transform any condition in our life and any condition in the world into something better. Into something better. When we, as flesh and blood, physical human beings, finally come to the realization that our word, our thoughts, our beliefs are more than what we use, that they are what we are, they are what we are. That is when we finally discover that we can transcend any experience we find ourselves in. That's when we stop focusing on trying to fix our life and start focusing on creating our life, on creating all the different aspects of our life. That's what happens when we put our word to good use. That's why the Christmas story isn't about Jesus at all. It's about all of us. Every single one of us. It's a metaphor about how something big and powerful can come from something small and fragile. It's a metaphor about the way that a single idea can grow in a perfectly natural way into something that can change the world, no matter what kind of a mess that world appears to be. Because we are divine beings. Some people have trouble saying that or accepting that, but we are divine beings. We are the power of life, the power of spirit, appearing in this body, expressing itself in, as, and through us as much as we allow it to. That's an important caveat, as much as we allow it to. We are the Word made flesh. That means our life is both our Word and the Word of Spirit taking form because they're one and the same. They are one and the same. And the sooner we come to realize this, the sooner we can begin changing our life and every part of it and the world for the better. This is the Christmas gift that we've been given long time ago, and we'll have it as long as we want to keep it, all of us. My friends, on behalf of the board, all of whom are here today, the ministers, the staff, the practitioners, and everybody who works to make this center the wonderful place that it is, and this is going to be a great year of transformation for us, I know for each and every one of you, a wonderful Christmas, a happy Hanukkah, a happy Kwanzaa, a happy solstice, and a happy everything else. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Okay. All right, let's take a moment here. A lot of thoughts, a lot of ideas challenging our upbringing and our beliefs, but take the ones that resonated with you positively and set aside the others for later. And let's know this. I know that an idea is a seed. And the universe has grown from such a seed, from a single idea in an infinite intelligence. And out of all that has been created and continues to be created over the last billions and billions of years, I am here. We are here. We are a part of that creative process. And we're here for a reason. Not just here in this room or here in this city or here in this country. We are here in this space, in this time, to learn how to love, to learn how to accept love, to learn how to manifest, to learn how to share what we manifest, and to embrace peace, kindness, and understanding for every person everywhere. That's why we're here. How we express that is unimportant. The work we do work that we love. The body that we have, treat it with love and respect. Share what we have, share what we create, recognizing that that sharing does not diminish us, it expands everything. That's the power we have. I know that within my mind, my consciousness, the invisible is far more powerful than the visible I see outside of me. So I recognize that the peace of kindness and understanding of every person is more powerful than the war and chaos that we see, and it can overcome it if we allow it to. I recognize that the health and wholeness that is within me as part of my spiritual nature can overcome any illness, any disease. I recognize that the ability to love that I have can overcome any emotional turmoil with my family, my friends, or between countries. That is how powerful we are, each one of us individually. And when we combine the best of what we are with the best of what everyone else is, we transform this world into a paradise. Not a paradise with streets of gold, but a paradise that is immersed in kindness and peace for every newborn child born under any conditions who will grow to an adult who can add more to the world. So this is the power we have. This is what we celebrate this holiday season, the birth of innocence, growing into the strength of awareness. Every person, every child, every adult. We give thanks for this awareness. Thanks for all that we have been given and all that we are yet to give. We give thanks for the opportunity to hear new ideas, to make choices, to embrace the best ideas we can find and to use them in the very best way. So we do that this holiday everywhere we go, whether it's with our family, parties, shopping, driving, whatever it happens to be, we are a center for peace and calm and compassion and forgiveness. And we allow this power to expand into the new year. This is our truth. We accept it. We embrace it. Please join me in saying, and so it is.